Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the NBA D-Ball Breakdown live show on the NBA. We had a little bit of a wind feel from Combo and a nice pleasant sound, almost like ASMR. But we're, as always, I'm Coach Nick, and I'm joined by Andrew Combo Salop to discuss what's happening in the NBA. Combo, what's going on, my man? Good morning.
Good morning, and happy birthday to you.
Ah, thank you. It is a birthday for me. Yes, another one in the books, and I'm happy to have it. And I don't know. I get to celebrate my birthday on the road starting tomorrow. I'm going across the country to teach my Chase defense to a couple of colleges. Very excited. Well,
this is not the New York trip yet, right?
It is. I will be in New York on Wednesday.
Oh, so we gotta have dinner or something.
Yeah, so we gotta get that figured out. I'm not doing anything else the rest of the day except getting ready for the trip, so we can always, you know, figure that out. Well, plenty of time. But be prepared. We might have some footage of Combo and Coach Nick together in the same place.
That'd be cool. Not virtually, but actually in person. The virtual stuff is cool, but in person is always awesome.
Absolutely. So, you know, we got to talk about the NBA. And don't forget, if you're out there on YouTube and you want to have your question answered, the best way to do it is with a super chat. It helps us keep the lights on and keep the show going. And we really, really appreciate it. Give you some love, put the question on the screen and actually answer it. But let's get going here with what we're talking about, which is, well, I mean, we can probably begin with the what everyone is most interested in is the Chet versus Wemby game that I just did a breakdown. If you haven't seen it, you go over there and watch it after this, during this, whatever. What did you see the game? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, what sticks out to me about both of them is the obvious stuff is the size, the skill level, the athleticism. They're unicorns. They look like video game players, but they also have the toughness on top of that, right? And, you know, I talked to Bob Ryan recently, and like Ralph Sampson had some of this stuff, but he didn't quite have the toughness of these two, who is like somewhat comparable to like these guys. But even though these guys are the evolution of something like that, but these guys have so much heart. They're both flexing. They're getting and ones. Wemby running through Chet. I mean, these
are you lighting Ralph Sampson on fire here? Is that what I'm listening to?
He doesn't have the toughness of these guys, I think.
How do you listen? You know, I will say this. Ralph Sampson was mean. So I don't know if that translates to tough, but he was pretty mean. And, you know, listen, he got his knees wore out on him pretty early. It's like, it's not his fault.
That was one piece of what I was saying. Do you have like a personal relationship with Ralph Sampson that triggered you?
I asked him, wanted to be interviewed once, and he goes, "No." So I was like, "Okay."
I heard he has like a bar somewhere or something, right? Or
I have no idea.
He's doing these days. Okay.
But anyway, he is one tall another effer. I mean, the guy, you crane your neck to look up to him. I mean, sometimes
Wemby might be taller.
I think he 7'4", and like Ralph Sampson would be 7'4". But yeah, Wemby could be a bit longer than that, but he's got an 8-foot wingspan, Wemby, and Chet Holmgren, who's 7'1", has a 7'6" wingspan. It's insane how long their arms are. So and let me, if people are wishing happy birthday wishes, really, really thank you. That's really nice.
Did you see what Jalen Williams went by him and he pinned it?
Oh, I know. Wait, who
that
did?
That's crazy. Wemby, like he had like Jalen Williams, who I think is actually a future all-star in his own right, went right by Wemby. Wemby was facing the other way, like totally out the picture, turns. It was almost like that Giannis thing in the playoffs where it's like you wouldn't even think that could happen.
Right. Well, I think the Giannis one was a lob, right, that he somehow came out of there to block.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't think that Wemby pinned it. He just blocked it, I think, right?
Okay, yeah.
And people want to get into the thing that, you know, the only question is would – the many players who are better finishers than Jalen Williams get blocked like that. And so, you know, I got a little comment on that. And now, listen, Jalen Williams is awesome. And I kind of slept on him last year. I apologize. I will not do that again because he is tough, man. I really, and in fact, he didn't even shoot that well in the game. But every time I was going through the footage, I'm like, the makes he was making were amazing.
I can't even think of a big weakness in his game. Like, he can really do everything.
Yeah. But you know, let's just say there's probably like, what, 15 guys that can finish better than him? 20 in the league?
All right, well, you're saying what, Kyrie probably would have thrown something at him?
Well, either that or like, you know, the number of people that are, you know, would be considered better than him finishing at the rim is got to be 15, 20. And then, you know, so that's many. That's why I was saying there's many people, you know. So it's not many, but anyway, that was –
They lit you up because of that?
What's that?
They lit you up for saying that it could have been a better
finish. One time I noticed it. Hey, but Max Gilchrist, thanks so much for the. He wants to just know about my Chet thoughts. I thought he was saying happy birthday. Oh, he did say happy birthday. Thanks so much, Max. And the other comment, Shooter Guy 7, Connor Laird, and then Connor gave us a super chat. There isn't a question here, Connor, but maybe if you want to throw one, then I see it in the chat. Let's put it up there. I guess we can put this one up here. How about that? Thank you, Connor. Are you more excited for Chet or Wemby? Is it your birthday? So, yes, it's my birthday. And who am I more excited for? That's a really interesting question. I guess I'll answer that first, and I'll let you weigh in, Combo. I suppose I'm more excited for Wemby. There just seems to be a little bit more going on there in the background that you can kind of – or not in the background, the foreground. The one-footed threes, they let him post up a little bit, and he can pass out of the post, which is exciting to me. So I'm probably a little bit more excited for Wemby, and I'm also less concerned this year with Chet's frailty. It seems like he's filled out a little bit. His legs aren't so thin. So maybe that's always what bothered me about it, and I was always worried about it. So I think that I've gone from severely concerned about Chet's health to like a little worried. What's your take?
I think I would be more excited about Wemby, but for this season, I might be more excited for Chet because he's on a better team and he fills a gap that they need. They need that rim protection. They need another stretch big. And I think he's that guy that could fill that role for them right away, even though he's a rookie.
Absolutely. H Cube, thanks for the birthday wishes. I appreciate that as well. And let's see here. Anybody else want to say happy birthday? Anyway, I'll get you if you say happy birthday in the comments. But I agree. And by the way, yes, OKC, I think that they're going all in. They're going to ruin some seasons here. There are people in the West who I think assume or plan on making the playoffs who very well will not do that because OKC will take that place. Am I thinking about Dallas maybe? What other team could that be?
Dallas is not looking good in the preseason, but it is only preseason and they don't have Kyrie. But I mean, they're going to need some big contributions from rookies like Derek Lively. Like, I don't know. They don't have depth, and they really don't have some experience, I think, that's needed to go deep in the playoffs. But they do have two top-end talents, two of the most talented players in the NBA. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, it didn't – I know that Kyrie joined later in the series in the season last year, but – it didn't lead them to the playoffs last year, and that's a real interesting. You can't really have seasons without Luka in the playoffs. It's really devastating for the NBA's fortunes, and for us. I mean, listen, that's when Luka shines. So I don't know. They're probably going to have to make a trade or something to figure something out. They want to shore this up. I don't know if they have the pieces for it either. Who knows? Maybe maybe Jason Kidd can figure some things out and they play above what we predict. But any other Western Conference teams you're worried about that might get supplanted by OKC?
Wow. So, I mean, look, what are the top teams? The Suns, the Nuggets, the Lakers. Who else do we got there? Who would you say right after that? The Clippers, if they stay healthy?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's go back to last year's standings, just if that indicates anything. So here it was: Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, Phoenix, Clippers, Golden State, Lakers, Timberwolves, and then Thunder, Pelicans.
Man, it's a deep West. Wow.
It's always a deep West, right? And the Mavericks were beyond below that. Utah was below that.
Wait, what was that thumbs up? Right? Wait. Is this something new on the live show? Did you see a thumbs up right by your head?
No.
There was like a little emoji like right here.
Oh, I was looking at the standings. Damn. Somebody said something about that in the comments. But I thought that maybe meant thumbs up on the YouTube side. But if you saw it on the screen... Maybe it's on the YouTube side. I don't know. But I don't know. Anybody, please give me some thumbs up. I like my favorite thing about the Google Meet these days is that is a thumb that that goes up like that. Yeah. My favorite thing. Anyway, Pablo, thank you for watching the Chet Wemby video and give me some nice comment on that. And again, if you haven't seen it, I mean, it's doing very well. People are watching it, but it would be great if you didn't miss it. Go watch it again if you haven't, or watch it twice. Let me see here. I got a look at LaMelo. I haven't seen him, but thank you, Miles, for the birthday wishes. I feel like I saw them in there somewhere. But anyway, yes, there's Miles. And did you see? I haven't gotten a chance to get over to the Charlotte to see what LaMelo looks like.
I did not see Charlotte.
All right, I'm gonna go look at that. But I want to say that Peyton Pritchard
Yeah,
he's the guy I think I'm going to have to do a video on. And I'm really mad that I didn't mention him in my Drew Holiday of the Celtics video. And I really should have, because I guess I kind of quickly got focused on the two young guys who are going to probably get a role as well, that they're going to need them to play well. But Peyton Pritchard sounds like
Delano Banton.
No, I talked about and, you know, Brissett and.
Peyton Pritchard had a huge day because he signed the contract and then had a huge game right after it. He must have been feeling really well.
Yeah, yeah.
He signed for $30 million and then he went off.
And it's weird because he definitely had moments where we know that he was good and he should have been contributing more. It's just weird, and I guess it's part of the reason why if we're not behind the scenes, we don't have the full picture to understand exactly why players are played or not played. But a lot of times it just comes out where it's like, why? Why does this guy, you know, he's doing nicely in these moments, and then you just turn away from him and go to like Hauser or anybody else on the bench, and he's just buried there. So I think this is his chance, and he might be getting a lot of FU buckets out there, but, you know, because he's so mad. Somebody else was like that last year. Do you remember that? And I think I even did a video where it was like, you know, he'd never, oh, I know. It might've been Lonnie Walker?
Lonnie Walker IV.
Yeah. It might've been him. Like, you know, he's good. He's like been on, oh yeah. He came back from an injury and the Lakers didn't put him back in. And then they finally did. And he was killing them in the playoffs. Right. But you can almost feel like every bucket he made was like a dagger at Darvin Ham for not playing him earlier or putting him back. Let's go to Connor has another super chat. Interestingly enough, in Canadian dollars, you get $2.79. I wonder if that must be the conversion, but thank you, Hoser.
I wanted to take a second to tell you about how fun it is to download Prize Picks and discover how much fun it is by making skill-based, real money fantasy sports entries. And best of all, you're only competing with yourself. Prize Picks offers frequent discounts, bonuses, and other exciting offers. Players can enjoy community-wide promotions, including Taco Tuesday and Flex Friday. I love that you can choose two or more players from any sport, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. I went bold this weekend by picking Kirk Cousins to throw for more than 275.5 yards, go Vikes, and Justin Fields less than 184.5 yards, bear down. And will add a whole new level to my game-watching experience as I hope some of these guys throw that ball down the field a lot. Go to prizepicks.com/CLNS and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CLNS. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Thoughts on Suns versus Nuggets? Who's on top in the West? So again, like, you know, no one's talking about the Nuggets besides maybe the Lakers, right? They're the ones saying, "Oh, we heard
They won the GM survey." The Nuggets.
They did.
Yeah, the GMs think they're going to win the West.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they lost Bruce Brown. We talked about that last show a little bit, and you know, and they who do they reload with anybody else? I feel like we already answered that, and I forgot now. No,
they all lost Jeff Green too.
Yeah. And you know, you can replace, I mean, listen, Jeff Green was nice for them. You could probably replace those kind of minutes. I don't know how easy it's going to replace Bruce Brown.
Well, Christian Brown's going to have to step up. Jamal Murray's going to have his first All-Star season, I think, during the regular season. Yeah. And Michael Porter Jr. he was very good in the playoffs, but I think he could still take a leap as a younger player.
Yeah.
So they have some guys that could, you know, step up and kind of like fill what it's hard to fill what Bruce Brown did because he was such a unique player, the way he guard multiple positions and play multiple positions on both sides of the floor and the way he opens up things in transition. But, you know, they have multiple guys that could still step up that are still young.
Right. I mean, you know, they're talking about Zeke Nagy, friend of the breakdown, who was actually lighting it up at some point from 3-point range, credit crazy numbers. And then kind of fell out of the rotation as they got going, but perhaps there's been some development there where he can come in as a big guy and space the floor as well. And then they did bring in Justin Holiday. You know, you never know, a guy like that who's been struggling for a while, but it has had some success and is a pro and a vet on that team. You know, could actually find himself a little bit of a role there too, where he could be valuable in those, you know, in those kind of Bruce Brown minutes. I mean, he's not anywhere near Bruce Brown defensively, but he might actually have a little bit, you know, to offer on the offensive end in that same way. So it'll be interesting to see. But again, that core of Jamal Murray and Jokic and Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon, you know, that's as good as a team that you're going to have. They play together really well, too. I mean, it's not even just like on paper. It's the chemistry that they have.
Yeah, the compound effect of everybody. I would say Jrue Holiday does a nice job of getting his own shot off. Like, he could get it. He could get his shot up from three. It's part of the reason why the Lakers brought in D'Angelo Russell. Like, you need guys that could get shots up in the half court.
Yeah. Yeah, and listen, I wasn't ecstatic with the D'Angelo Russell, like, bringing him back even. I felt like, you know, and obviously he played himself out of the rotation by the very end. But we can't forget that there were moments in the playoffs where he really, really helped them. And again, you know, part of the thing about their defense, their defense was so good as a whole that if, you know, he's going to be out there and not be an amazing defender, that's okay. They were able to handle that. And because of that, he doesn't foul much. Remember, we talked about this last year. It's a fascinating notion of, like, a bad defender doesn't foul. So you kind of get a little bit of a benefit from that. And that we saw that the Lakers and the huge foul disparity. And I tried to show, you know, some reasons why it was merited, that foul disparity and the free throw disparity they had last year. It won't quiet anybody necessarily from complaining that they got a fair, unfair whistle. And, you know, and listen, it is possible after the LeBron no call against the Celtics when he went to the hoop and they lost in overtime. You know, it's hard to explain any other way, but I tried. You can't blame me for trying.
It's interesting you say that, because one of the lowest IQ things you could do in basketball is foul a guy that has no chance of making that shot.
Yeah.
Like, that happens pretty often. So I do totally agree with you. I see that all the time. Like, a guy's in a position where he can't score and you foul him. It's just terrible. It's, you know, it's not the clock. They can put points on the board and there's no reason for it.
Absolutely. Now, we do have Kays Kajani. Thank you so much for the super chat. There's no question in there, but if you do want to...
Maybe it's for your birthday.
Oh, okay. I'll take it. A little birthday gift. That'd be nice. It's funny. I'm going on this trip, by the way, to help some colleges, you know, learn the Chase defense, which I developed. And I'm going to film the crap out of it. So I got a GoPro a buddy just lent me, but I got to go to the store and buy some GoPro accessories that I can mount and hold it, whatever. Do you have a GoPro?
I don't.
Oh, okay. I'm excited. I haven't used one before. I'm very excited. So I'll use a $199 or part of that for my accessories. Connor is back again. Thank you so much, Connor. With the last question, doesn't have to be your last question, Connor. But two man action, Dame and Giannis? ? What's the question in there? Can you help me?
I think the answer is good.
Good. Yes, perhaps. Yeah, I can't wait to get on the Synergy and whatever and just start studying, Steph and CP3, Dame and Giannis. Certainly want to see Jrue out there with the Celtics, all these, whatever. And then obviously we got to figure out what's happening with Harden, who's apparently, you know, in the practices and playing, and we'll probably get out there for them. But I do want to see that, because obviously what we would hope to see is some, by the way, do you think that Giannis would be good at, like, flashing to the elbow, Dame passing it to him, and then coming right back for a get action right back to him as a pinch post? Do you think that Giannis would be good at that?
Yeah, I think he would be good at it, and I think he'd be willing to do it, just knowing his mentality, whatever it takes to win, you know? So I do believe he could do that. And he's a team-first guy, so I could totally see it. I mean, he could bring down the ball and you know, run through walls like he always does, or they could – you know, place him in different positions now with Dame and everything they have around him, Chris Middleton creating on his own. So it's going to be very interesting. And I would say, like, the two teams in the East, it does seem like you can never count the Heat out, are the Celtics and the Bucks. But me personally, and I don't think I'm with the majority here, I have the Bucks over the Celtics. And simply one of the reasons is that Dame and Giannis, I believe in them as playoff performers more than anybody on the Celtics.
Wow. So you believe more than the Jays?
Yes. And I love Jalen. I'm not as high on Jason, but, you know, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, after we saw the last couple of playoffs, yes, there's reason to believe that is. I mean, listen, Damian Lillard is one of the clutchest guys we've seen, you know, in his era. I mean, I can't, there's just time and time and again, he just hits clutch shots, or, you know, over the course of regular season, in the playoffs, no matter what. So he's proven himself in my mind on that end. And Giannis, you know, certainly when they won the title, like, kind of came through with the free throws and tends to be unstoppable no matter what. Like, it's hard to, you know, Giannis doesn't necessarily have bad games where, like, he's off from his outside shot, right? Because he's going to the basket more anyway.
Yeah.
So I would like to see that. And by the way, Dame is another one of those guys that sets people up really, really well. It hits them in the pocket, on time, on target. So, yeah, I'm anxious to see how that will help the Bucks.
So Dame never been, I mean – they had some playoff runs, but he never been in a true situation where he was on a title contender. And I was talking to a friend who works in the NBA, and I was telling him, like, Dame actually moves better without the ball than people think as well. Yeah. You know, he could move off the ball and hit threes. People think that that's something he can't do. He definitely could do that. And my friend was telling me that he believes if Dame was on Golden State, Golden State would have the same success as they did with Steph. Do you believe that to be true?
Yeah, he could play the Steph role without question. He's just a high IQ, understands how to play the game. Yeah, and you can certainly picture plenty of times of him cutting like backdoor, getting a pass, dunking on guys,
yeah,
you know, and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, he certainly knows how to exist in that framework. And that was a mistake that the Warriors made. They needed to just have waited. They probably could have been in that Dame mix and with the young guys they had and been able to get him. And I think I much rather would see Dame and Steph, even though it's kind of redundant and weird, but it might actually work in those stretches. So, yeah, it's too bad. I really wish we could have seen that. But nonetheless, you know, him and Giannis is certainly something that's going to be really, really fun to watch. I would like to see Dame set a ball screen for Giannis. That would be interesting, too.
Yeah, I mean, we see Jokic, Jamal Murray do that. Why not?
Yeah, for sure. Now, thoughts on the Sacramento Kings this year? Thank you, Kais Kajani. So there's the super chat. Thank you. And forgive me if it's Kais or Kais. I don't know. How would you say that? How would you pronounce that? Kais. I don't know. Could be Kais. I don't know. Thoughts on the Sacramento Kings. What do you think this year?
Yeah, I like everything they do. They brought the big man from overseas, which you did a video on.
Yeah.
People are calling him one of the best shooters in the world. So we will see what develops with that.
Well, it's interesting. Vezenkov, you know, he's got an interesting form. You know, he likes to hop into a shot, which I like, but it's, it's weird because like he wins MVP of the EuroLeague playing like a role player in the NBA, you know, would probably makes sense when you've been in the experience around the EuroLeague. You can see how that happens that way because they're just, isn't a lot of guys who are going to play hero ball, right, and do that successfully in the EuroLeague. So, but if you're talking about a guy that knows how to fit into the Princeton actions that they run, I mean, this guy's perfect for it. He's you know, still in his prime. So I think, yeah, I mean, you know, defensively could be an issue for him. You know, I don't know how they're going to manage that across with Sabonis and what the lineups are, but it certainly just gives Mike Brown more ammunition. And I would say that, you know, the only issues they might have had in the playoffs were probably, you know, experienced to some degree at that level. So
yeah,
they have it, they've gotten it, and they're going to be able to continue that this year. I would think they're going to be even tougher of an out this year. And I would expect them to be, let's see, they finished third last year. I mean, that's a tough way to – that's tough. I don't know if they're going to finish third again this year, but certainly they should be third, fourth. They could do that again and be right there with the home court advantage in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, they're a team that's doing it the right way, and they have a young team with a lot of guys who could still get better. De'Aaron Fox could still get even better. I think Sabonis was actually hurt last year. He wasn't able to even shoot the basketball as good as he could shoot the basketball. He was a little bit hesitant because he was in pain. Keegan Murray is very young. He can get better. Yeah, so, I mean, they got other guys off the bench as well that are young. So they're doing things the right way. I think they play modern basketball, quick basketball, and they just got to keep going at it year after year and not do anything too drastic because I like their core.
Well, you know, the irony that when you're calling it modern basketball is that they really their half-court offense is rooted in the 60s Celtics, what they used to do, and then into the Princeton offense later, really. So, but you're mixing the modern techniques and skills with the patterning movement patterns that we had back then, which is, you know, they were very smart back then.
Not too much ball stopping is what I meant. Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. And there was never that much ball stopping even back then, you know, in Princeton. Yeah. They didn't want you to. But they didn't shoot it off the dribble like they did back then. And they didn't dribble as well back then and stuff. They didn't skip pass like they used to, like they do now. So when you start mixing all together, now you really see this offense for what it could be. You know, we see that with Miami does it to some degree. We see the Warriors. We see the Kings. I kind of wish you would continue to spread more. Everyone runs to run like pistol action, which is sort of rooted in all that too. But it would be nice to see a lot more like get actions, handoffs, give and goes, backdoors, high post flashing, all those things that were so a staple of, you know, the game. That I got to make a video on offense back in the 30s and 40s. I got to get some footage out and do it because it would look like what the Globetrotters do now in a way. In fact, the Globetrotters, someone had mentioned them in the comments earlier, the Globetrotters I'm convinced you could run not quite the magic circle thing, not magic circle, but you know, the weave they do on the top.
Three-man weave,
you
yeah.
could probably do some version of that in a real game and just kill teams, and it would be fun.
In Europe, they had certain offenses like that where it would start with like three passes at the beginning and get guys moving.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, you know, and then, but like, you know how they, you know, I did a video with them where it's like, it's four guys just sprinting in a figure eight pretty much. And they'll high post and then they'll throw it and they kick it back and they throw, and you know, they're almost not even looking to score just yet. And meanwhile, the defense cannot, you know, can't keep up. I might teach that.
It's all misdirection at the end of the day. Right. And yeah. Also another guy who like broke the game wide open for them last season was Kevin Huerter with his movement shooting fits that system so well. So they Absolutely. Got a lot of young guys that could, you know, really take another leap this season. And the compound effect of that with Sabonis being healthy in the playoffs, they could be dangerous.
Yeah. And Huerter was the guy I was thinking about who just needed that seasoning. He had already played in the playoffs before, right. But I just felt like this was his most full, complete role he'd had on a team. And the pressure on, and you know, he just needed to learn from that. And I suspect that he'll be better for this year. You know, and there are those teams that they might take their lumps in the playoffs and have a shot and seize the light at the end of the tunnel and then sort of transform the next year. So we'll see if Mike Brown can keep that going as well. You know, I'm excited. The other guy that popped up in my timeline at the end this morning was Jaime Jaquez.
He's really good.
So I have to apologize, I guess, to my buddy Jason, who is a UCLA alum and had been touting him for 4 years, and I've been trying to tamp down his expectations for 4 years, saying he's just not going to be able to do that in the NBA. He won't even get drafted. This is not going to happen. And you know, he got drafted, right? Or was he signed?
And he's in a great situation with the Heat.
Yeah, let me look real quick. Let's see, what was his
transfer? He's going to be a good player. He's going to just be one of those winning players, you know.
Yeah, he was drafted in the first round, forgive me, the 18th. So I was like already surprised by that. Although, again, he had a pretty good or very good career in for 4 years. But usually the four-year players get stigmatized. They don't get drafted in the first round. But he's shown out a lot more athletic ability than we had seen at UCLA. And, I mean, he got a nice post-up last night with all that footwork we've seen from him in the past. That was the thing I didn't think he was going to get. Now, again, once they get all the guys healthy and then whatever – is he going to get an opportunity? But at the very least, they lost two starters. I guess if you want to put Strus as a starter or not because of the injury to Hero. Either way, two major minute players are gone, and they didn't really sign anybody. So those are open minutes for him. He could easily handle that. And since he's a 4-year player in college, he's already seasoned to the point where he can come in right away and help him.
If I'm the Blazers, I look to acquire him for Malcolm Brogdon, maybe him and Jovic, for a player that could help the Heat right now.
Interesting. If you're the Blazers, you do Jovic and who? Jaquez?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the Heat would do it, but I think Malcolm could help them right now. He's not Drew Holiday, and he's definitely not Dame, but he's a good player. You know, sixth man of the year.
Yeah. Listen, I love Brogdon. I think you know, either way, they have some time. They could give Jaquez 6 weeks to see how he shapes up. And if he continues what we've seen so far, then they won't need to, you know, bring him in, you know, whatever. We'll see.
I think the Blazers, because they have these like younger, really talented players, Jaquez would be a really nice guy for them who's, you know, he's a more mature, younger player that still fits their timeline, but just, you know, great for the locker room. Looks like he's going to be a winning NBA player with maybe not the talent that some of those other guys have, but I think it's a nice balance.
Right. Wait, did you mention the GM poll earlier?
Yes.
So, yeah, because I believe Spoelstra is way up at the top on all the coaching metrics.
I mean, that's obvious, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I might have even forgotten it. And then what we saw last year in the playoffs, I thought really, you know, just made it clear, you know, especially against the Celtics, how good he is and what he can do to help his team in those situations to get to another level, you know. And by the way, it's really sad. Again, I was watching Jimmy in the earlier rounds for whatever reason, looking at clips, and then you picture him in the finals. You know, it's too bad that something happened. He broke down.
He was injured.
Yeah. And it was a much different thing outcome, I think.
As much fun as it is to talk about, you know, all this stuff that we could project to happen in the playoffs and in the finals, it all comes down to health at the end of the day. As I was talking about with Sabonis, he was hurt. Jimmy was hurt after that ankle injury against the Knicks. I think the Celtics, like Porzingis' health, is going to be key for them. So it really just all depends on health at the end of the day. But for us, we have to talk about things, so we can't just like mention that every single time, right? There's no fun in that. So I guess when we're talking, we just have to think about every team in full health, and there's really
how I usually do it, unless it's a player that's just struggled for years to stay healthy. I really like to prefer to imagine that they will be healthy and they'll manage it properly. And if they twist the ankle, whatever, they'll be back in a few weeks, or that whole thing. So, you gotta hope that that happens, because otherwise we get these, you know, mid-January games where no one wants to watch them. And we even get the mid, you know, November games nobody wants to watch, which is why they have this in-season tournament now, which will, you know, cover a few weeks of the season. And before it culminates in Vegas, the final four of that, which would be really interesting. So, I'm interested to see how that will play out. I think it will add some excitement into the beginning of the year they've been missing. But we do have another super chat. Connor, thank you. Connor's back. And don't forget, if you want your question answered, this is the best way to do it. Super chat. Thank you. Thank you, Connor. Will the Raptors be relevant in the next decade? That's an interesting question. What do you think?
Not looking good right now. They're like in middle ground, which is never good. They have to either acquire somebody or bottom out.
I'm anxious to see what the European influence is on the Raptors, because it could be a whole new level where they play differently. I mean, I don't know. He's been here already with the G League before that, but he does have all his European roots. So there might be a whole new, you know, because, you know, European teams play a lot differently, and it could catch people off guard defensively, you know. And we've been waiting kind of for OG to take that next step, you know, from just, you know, one of the top defenders in the league and, you know, good this 3-and-D guy to maybe something more. Probably Siakam, too. We've been waiting for him to make another jump. So, you know, they lost Fred VanVleet, though, which is going to be a hole they have to fill. So I don't know if they're going to be relevant. I mean, relevant would be they get to the conference finals, right? That's relevant.
Well, relevant in general terms would be like being a contender, right? Or no, it's not that.
Let's just pretend they were doing awesome and they, and they were like third in the conference for all year long. They still might not get a lot of love from people until, like, you know, they would go deeper in the playoffs and then establish that.
Yeah. Toronto, I mean, for the simple reason they don't exist in our country, they're outside of our country. I mean, I think that it's harder for them to stay relevant. They have to be like super good,
right,
for them to be relevant.
Everyone, I think, has to be super good to be relevant in theory, right?
No, Lakers, relevant always, not super good. Last year, before they made all those trades.
Interesting. Okay. You thought they were relevant before the trades anyway?
Yeah. Everybody, well, they have LeBron is his own media market, so.
Yeah, so that might be an interesting case. Other than that, though, I would imagine, yes, for Toronto, because like, it's going to be very difficult for them to sign free agents who want to go there for a lot of reasons, taxes and whatnot, and just being way up there. Although Toronto is an amazing city, like it would be a great place to live. And I think when they get there, people actually really like it, and they realize it's a really cool place to live. But, you know, it takes a leap, and you got to get somebody over there first. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like they're going to have to, you know, right, bottom out, get a really great draft pick, pair them hopefully with the guys they still have, and then might be able to do something. But that's a 3-year plan, right?
Yeah. It's tough. They're in that middle ground that the Pacers were in for a while, but now the Pacers are going in the other direction. Jairus Walker had a really nice preseason game. Obviously, Tyrese Haliburton is one of the best point guards in the league, and they're looking like they're on the way up and not in that middle ground with Miles Turner and everybody else that they have, even though it seems like they might be moving off Buddy Hield eventually, but that'll be
interesting. Yeah, maybe. I mean, listen, I it's funny because I'm trying to picture Carlisle like agreeing to a trade that would make them worse to bring more assets in, just because Carlisle's in a situation in his career where I don't think he wants to tank or deal with that.
And he hasn't been, you know?
Right. And he knows that Buddy is a guy that would help them. I think, you know, so we'll have to see, because, yeah, are the Pacers the same kind of team like the Thunder, where they might, surprise people in the East who had sort of assumed they're going to make the playoffs, and then the Pacers come out of nowhere? I don't know. I mean, you know, they have a lot of great pieces that are very intriguing, and they have Carlisle. So those are things that should yield, you know, playing over their head and maybe winning more than we think.
Yeah, I they're doing things the right way. You know, they never, like, the Heat went by this. The Heat go by this format. They never want to bottom out, even though years before they had no chance of winning a championship. there are years that nobody even thinks they have a chance to win a championship and they get far. So they're never trying to bottom out. It's a different way to do things.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Mikey Famine, for the happy birthday wish, and Martian Murray. I appreciate it. That's great. Martian Murray, I got that right. All right. Thank you so much for the birthday wishes. Yeah, you know, it's nice to have, it's the one day of the year I actually check my Facebook account.
Oh, yeah. You. A lot of people are hitting you off out there.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people are hitting you off out there. The ones that I go, it's on my birthday to thank everybody on Facebook for the happy birthday. And then Connor, again, Connor, listen, you've been a rock star today. Thank you so much for all the super chats. And answering questions, no problem. That's why we're here. And then thanks for the happy birthday wishes. Well, listen, it wouldn't be a live show without a super chat from your friend and mine, Bron. Bron, thank you so much out there again for another Canadian. Happy birthday, coach. Thank you. A bit off topic, but what do you think about Marin Johannes' one-legged and off-balance shooting? So I am upset because somebody, I was going through my freaking Instagram messages from like months and months and months ago, and someone had already told me about her shooting these.
I sent you that, Coach Nick.
That was from you?
No. Check your DMs.
Somebody else sent me then too. Do you have a burner?
No, 1-2 combo, O-N-E-T-W-O-C-O-M-B-O.
Because maybe I was just kind of so quickly reading the messages, I didn't realize it was you. I'm going to look and I'll have to find it. Wait, is it you? Oh, no. I'm talking about months ago. You didn't send that. You just sent it to me recently, right?
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about months and months and months ago. Somebody was like, you got to check this out. So I'm really mad. I wanted to be on top of that. But again, she did it off the left foot going to the left on the left wing. I was playing around that as well and felt like it was not hard to keep it straight, even though you're drifting. So there's something about, like, obviously your right hip and your right elbow are already in line because you're going to your left, helps that. Whereas if you're going to go to your right and, you know, again, I don't think you can go off the right foot going to your right. That just seems to be a little bit too hard. You could go off the right foot going to the left and still sort of maintain it. But again, it seems to be slightly more, you know, comfortable when you go off your left foot and right hand. But I love it. I think it's a perfect example of why that shot's viable as if someone's chasing you around. And it will be a thing. Don't, you know, 5 years from now, whatever it's going to be, you're going to see more and more players year over year shooting it. And I will be the one who told everybody about it.
Okay.
Or kind of. I mean, listen, we got to give Juan Carlos Navarro. I think he was the guy that was doing it maybe the earliest.
How about combo? Like 75% of his IG posts are one-legged threes. So
really? All right, you know what? I got
of the posts that I've posted me playing. Yeah, a lot of them.
All right, so well, there you go. So well, I love it, and I was supposed to be in Germany earlier this year and talk to a guy Tomas, I forgot his last name, who also does them a lot in his league, and I'm gonna get out there at some point and figure that out and talk to those guys to figure out A, how they develop it, and B, what are the tricks to it? Because there's probably some interesting stuff in there. But, and again, when we practice a lot with my guys on finishing, we work a lot on late gathers, which means that as you're dribbling, you want to gather on the same step that you're jumping off of. And that also leads a little bit into that sort of one-legged threes, which catches the person off guard. And because you're going off of one foot like that, you don't need to dip as much in that way where I've taught off the dribble dips before on a 1-2. This one, you can just snatch it and shoot it in the one motion because you have all that energy generating from the actual floating of the shot. So lots to explore out of this, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's a great shot. I think it becomes a trend, like how the step back has been a trend, you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, I can remember the floater being a trend that no one, you know, I didn't want to teach this floater 10 years ago. So look at how we keep developing. Another super chat. Thank you so much from Van Hoot, 2234, and all you Canadians. It must be a day off in Canada. I don't know. Yours is tomorrow. Well, happy birthday to a fellow Libra, Van Hoot. Your new method of defense reminds me of how Thibault used to defend from behind with his hands thoughts. So in my video, I was kind of got into a hurry of getting the video out, and I forgot that I had the 3 or 4 clips of Thibault doing it. So absolutely, I texted him. If you're watching, Matisse, please text me back. I want to talk to you about this because I think you'd love it. But there's no question that not only does Thibault like to play behind, I think he was, you know, in coordination with Embiid to be in the position to drop whenever that happened. But he uses offensive footwork on defense to contest shots from behind. That's the next level we got to explore a lot more of. All the drops and splits that we do to attack on the catch on offense, we need to do the same thing on defense and get away from the step slides and the Chavis have closeouts and all that stuff. And that sort of goes into where my my defense plays into as well, because I'm gonna shoot the crap out of the the Baptist Bible College. I'll be there this week, and then I'll be at Queens College in New York. So I'm gonna have lots of footage. I'm gonna maybe create a video that we could have as a definitive Chase defense explainer. But what it does is it opens up the defense to just run and unlock your athletic ability. And take away that fear of like getting beat up the dribble, people maybe play that way. Yeah. They might get, we get rid of that fear. It's not there anymore. You're trying to get behind as quickly as possible so that your teammates can support you. There's more trust involved, which I think will bleed into your man-to-man defenses. So, yeah. What's going on? You're looking at something very intently, and it makes me wonder what.
Yeah. <it's>, I was letting you go, Coach
Your
Nick.
Your camera is on, and we can see you. case you're wondering. All right, so I cannot wait to see how the Chase defense, as the teams are going to start playing it. There's a guy already playing it in Scotland. Several games, and it's been killing teams, and it's been so exciting to watch because they're still developing it and they're still learning how to play it better and better, and it's causing so much havoc. And in case you missed it, you go back and watch that video too. It's the maybe I'll just call it the Chase defense in the title now because it's time. But basically, it's a zone defense designed to play behind the ball and cause all amount of havoc, and it's been incredible. I've done 50 Zooms with coaches all around the world in the last three or four weeks.
Let me ask you a question, Coach Nick. Did Matisse inspire you for this kind of defense, or it was a thought before you seen him join it?
The initial inspiration was just looking at the offensive ratings year over year for decades. It just continues to go up. So my thought was then, what we're doing on defense doesn't work. We need something radical. And then I remembered how Utah guarded James Harden in the playoffs in 2019. Earlier that year, the Bucks did it too, like three quarters to the side of him, almost behind, with Rudy Gobert and Utah containing, and Brooke Lopez containing on for the Bucks. So I remembered that, and then I remembered a defense I had ran that was a little I ran the Amoeba defense, but I had a really big center one year. I didn't want him to be closing out. So somebody had told me about the point zone that Dean Smith had invented in the 80s. So I kind of remembered that. I took a little bit of that, took a little bit of the Amoeba, and we kind of mixed it all together. And then, just said, why play three quarters behind? Let's just go all the way behind. And then what you realize is you can't set a ball screen. So all ball screens are gone pretty much. And then you really can't – you're not going to shoot a three off the dribble with somebody breathing down your neck, I don't think. And a lot of the closeouts we have to get behind are probably going to thwart a lot of the catch-and-shoot shots that people think are open. But because of the footwork, you're not slowing down. There's no choppy step thing where they like that and they shoot over you. That you're getting there on at full speed and doing a hockey stop behind. And so suddenly some of those catch-and-shoot threes don't feel so open.
I would save some of your defense for these colleges. I would save some of it for the postseason to give, because it's a completely different look, and that often works when you do that.
Yeah, I mean that's true, but also want to have it. You need some reps in games, right?
That's true. That's true. Well, in practice, you can rep it out.
Yeah, but you got to have it. And you got to play in some games too. But that's okay. But I hear you. But certainly, But yeah, and by the way, there are some things that really, really worry me about that offenses could do. I ain't going to tell anybody what they are. I mean, I tell the coaches who are working on the defense to be prepared for that. But there are some things. And by the way, there are some things that you can do against any defense that you could be worried about. But yeah. And then thank you, Ellie Bosch.
It's a chess match at the end of the day.
What's that? What'd you say?
It's a chess match at the end of the day.
Chess match. Absolutely. So
it's a chess match at the end of the day.
From Melbourne, Australia, for the very early morning birthday wishes. I really appreciate it. We have another super chat. Here we go. Let's do it. From Blorange Tears. Thank you so much, Blorange. How come you guys don't mention our New York Knicks? Forgive me. This is Uncle Freezy from Blorange Tears. Happy birthday. Thank you so much, Uncle Freezy. You know what? Why don't we mention the damn Knicks? It took a super chat to get us to do that. What are your thoughts? You are right in the heart of the New York metropolitan area.
I feel like people think that a lot of this depends on RJ Barrett because Julius Randle is who he is. Jalen Brunson been so great. So how much of a leap is he going to take? I believe that the expectations for RJ Barrett are so high, and he might not ever be that player that Knicks fans hope he will be. But the guy that could actually help them take that leap is Emmanuel Quickley, who has some interesting numbers as a young player, even though he's not consistent yet. So, I mean, they're an interesting team. I never liked the way Tibbs played offense. Sometimes you really don't even know what they're doing on offense. And I think they need to bring in Jay Wright as the new head coach of the New York Knicks, the Nova Knicks, since they have so many players.
Well, right, might really as well. Nova. That's interesting. I mean,
did I come in hot? Did I come in hot?
I didn't have lighting Tibbs on fire on my bingo card this morning, but you know, maybe they have it in the back pocket, in their back pocket, and like, you know, in case things go south in the beginning of the year and they need to make a change. But I don't see that happening. Yeah, I mean, listen, they blew the window on trading both RJ Barrett and oh my goodness gracious, you know, lefty big guy. This is my brain. Why is my brain?
Hartenstein?
No, the biggest scorer, Randall. Thank you. Randall could have been traded at the height of his, you know, value a couple of years ago and stuff like that. But they have what they have. Quentin Grimes, love him. He's on my favorite players list too. Like, I would love to have a team that has like Quentin Grimes on it and from the Kings. We already talked about him. God damn it,
Fox.
No. You know, the other young guy who's just like
Keegan Grimes. Murray. Keegan Murray.
Thank you. Like, those two guys would be a great cornerstones to have as, like, you know, obviously if we put them alongside, you know, a star. But those are the kind of guys I love, you know, who are just tough as nails, can shoot. So they have pieces. They were fifth in the East. They you know, were able to beat Cleveland. They got out coached in the second round against Spoelstra and the Heat. So that's probably their ceiling, right? And I think that, yeah, RJ Barrett's the guy that you could kind of upgrade, unfortunately. I don't know if he's just going to get beyond what he is. And it's not bad. You know, he's got ability. But at some point, it's the Randall-Barrett duo that I'm concerned about. And if there's ever value for them, I would really look at, you know, pulling off a trade. And Randall could also help people, too. He could help a good team somewhere else. So, you know, but you know, they have – there's an excitement to them. Certainly Brunson has reignited something there in the Garden that is really great. And he really is just such a great player too. I love watching Brunson. Again, the best post-up player in the league and probably the shortest.
Yeah, it's true. Do you think he's a better post-up player than Embiid and Jokic? No, he's not a better post-up player than Jokic.
Well, he I don't know, man. He's got the some of the best footwork and shiftiness. You know, Embiid hasn't really – I feel like I hadn't seen a really good dream shake, you know, stuff like Embiid used to do more of. Maybe last year he got broken down a little bit. But – and Jokic, it's not like he's got – what?
He'll punish you in the post.
He'll punish you, and he loves those elbows, and he's got beautiful touch without question. And he got the runners too. But I don't know if we see a lot of, like, you know, of that – you know, when you watch Brunson, man – guys are like, he's breaking. What's the equivalent of breaking ankles in the post? That's what he's doing.
He's a little, he's almost in between mid range and all the way at the basket with the post work, right? Like, he's kind of in that in between area.
But it's also at the end of a drive. So it's not like he's five dribbles backing you down. It's end of a drive, then he turns into the post up, which again is awesome. I just love all of
Luka's that. Luka's really good at it too, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Luka might be up there too, as well. Thank God we at least have one American in that mix. At any rate, yeah. So it's a fun team, and again, the question is, can Tibbs smile a little bit? You know, can he inject a little bit of that energy into it? Because otherwise, he's just a you know, a cloud that's raining on them wherever they walk. Like Linus, I don't know who was it in the Peanuts that has the cloud over his head all the time. That's him.
Josh Hart's another really good. He's like a New York guy. Like he's like just fits the New York culture so well.
Right.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I'll never forget the day Josh Hart was traded because I was in Portland right there. Okay. Alan Tran, we have another super chat. Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it. And as we start to wrap this up, because guess what? I have another Zoom chat to do with another coach on my defense. Alan asks, thank you, Alan. Between Adrian Griffin, Nick Nurse, and Frank Vogel, which coach will have the easiest transition with their new team? Who will have the hardest time? So I would think that maybe I might go with, wow. Well, Nick Nurse might be the guy who has the hardest time because he's got to deal with the whole James Harden saga, right?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. He kind of like got himself into a pickle. You know what, though? Like, James Harden's creativity and Nick Nurse's creativity. Might be a nice blend if they actually ever got it together. But we all know that James Harden probably won't be there for the long term. But we're going to have to see how this plays out. Will he actually play a preseason game? Will he actually play a regular season game? He's there working hard on his individual skills before the games.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, so that one might be the hardest in terms of the management of the egos and the players and that whole thing. Adrian Griffin will probably have the smoothest thing because I just feel like Dame and Giannis, you know, they will – their leaders, they are going to make – they'll help make it smooth out for him as welcoming him into there. And then Frank Vogel will have probably the most difficult time X's and O's-wise to figure out how to get these guys to play together somehow cohesively on an offense. So that might be – so that each one has their own challenges, but Adrian Griffin has the easiest time, I think, of all of them.
I would agree.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and I think Nick Nurse is the hardest for one reason – but Frank Vogel will have it also pretty difficult because new players, new coach. And again, you're going to try and you're jamming four guys into a square, into a hole or whatever that analogy is. And it's going to be difficult. And again, and Vogel is also probably more focused on the defense at this point. So we'll see how that all plays out. I'm anxious to see how the Suns come because I think people might be half forgetting about them a little bit and sort of not realizing that there is a ceiling for them that's pretty darn high.
There is. I mean, I think the Grayson Allen acquisition was really important for them. Just another good basketball player to have on the court. Eric Gordon is a guy who's older now, but he really fits with what they do well. I mean, in this preseason game, they went off in that first quarter, and they have some spacing that we haven't seen since the likes of prime Golden State with all that shooting around them, right?
Yeah. Well, let's not forget, the Cavs did the same thing. They added Niang and Strus, I believe, right?
Yeah, and Watanabe is another guy for the Suns, right?
Oh, Watanabe and the Suns, yeah. So yeah. Some shooters moved around a little bit here to add some spacing alongside some good players. And that's really, really going to be important for them as well. So, yeah, I'm anxious to see how this all works out with all that. I mean, listen, there's more and more shooters, I feel like, now in the league that can spread the floor at various positions. And that'll just continue to keep going up until we get to the future of basketball, which will be 5 40% three-point shooters at the same time and just spreading the floor even farther.
Analytics and Steph Curry have changed the game. My question to you is, do you feel, because I feel this way, that maybe the greatest shooters aren't as great as they used to be, but the bottom end of shooting is better than it. Like the average shooter is a lot better than it used to be, right?
It's just got to be. Now, that said, the average shooter back in the day in the 80s, you know, the motion is still the same for the most part. The coaching just wouldn't allow more threes. So,
no, I think there was more unique forms back then. There was more like, oh, I never seen that before. You see less of that now. I feel like everybody shoots more or less more similar than they used to.
That's interesting. Okay. And part of that has to do with the mid-range where you can make shots with interesting forms in the mid-range.
Remember Michael Adams? Like they had like guys like that who would just shoot like we'd never seen anything like this
before. Yeah, Adams was pretty gross. But again, Adams is also very unique as well. Sorry.
He was an all-star. He was an all-star, by the way.
He was awesome. He was like a water bug, just so quick and so aggressive. Yeah. But he had a double pump under his chin shot. But so there's something to that. You're right. And I think that's part of it is we finally learn how to teach shooting properly. So that the rhythm part that we had never understood going back in the day because we didn't think about having to shoot from that far. Now that that's gotten bled into the game and the 10-year-olds from 10 years ago are now in the league. The thing that we haven't seen bear out, though, is the average three-point percentage has simply never gone up. And that's the thing I want to start seeing.
But what is absolutely properly mean? Like what we think we're always going to look 20 years back and say that wasn't proper.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because somebody actually asked me that the other day when we were talking about climate change. So we look back at like science.
Oh, where did I take this conversation?
Well, let me just say this. We look back 2,000 years ago, we look back at scientists and they were like, they didn't know anything, right?
Right.
So the question is 2,000 years from now, are they going to look back at our era and think, gosh, they didn't know anything? And it's hard to 100%. Picture that, right? Because we have learned so much and we are pretty modern, right? But obviously they're going to have space travel, whatever. It's going to be insane. But so there's that probably is right as far as, you know, but it's hard to imagine 20 years from now, they're going to figure out even better ways to shoot the ball. Like, you know, if it's anywhere near what we're doing now, it's just right.
Well, I think there's even from what we know now, there's even a lot left on the table for a lot of players. So why not?
But the motion is very similar as it's been since the 50s, pretty much. So that's the question. What we've unlocked is alignment and we've unlocked better rhythm. And that has cured a lot of the hitches and the elbow and all that stuff that we've seen.
I think we took out the word form for, like, everything was more rigid and form based, and now it's more about flow.
Yeah. Okay. So again, can you continue 20 years more developing that? I guess. And then is 50% going to be elite from 3-point shooting and 40% is going to be average? Maybe.
Well, they'll change. If it gets that crazy, there'll be a tipping point and they'll change the rules somehow.
Right. Maybe. Yeah. Or change the court. Well, I got to wrap this up, but we have Blorange Tears. Thank you again for another super chat. Very generous of you. Wow. Thanks, Coach and Combo. We think Quickly and Grimes could be the missing pieces. I agree. I mean, it's his year. It's Quickly's year to finally put his stamp on the game and establish himself as that guy we've been waiting for.
Wait, one quickly stat. Hold on 1 second.
It's not so quick.
Yeah, I know it's not, but I have it right here. Don't worry. All right, here we go. One, over his first 3 years in the league, IQ is one of just 4 players in NBA history to tally a total of at least 700 rebounds, 600 assists, and 400 made three-pointers while posting a true shooting percentage above 55%. The other 3 players in this club are Damian Lillard, Trae Young, and Luka Doncic.
Wow. So I guess the rebounding gets him into a setting where Steph is not in that.
Yeah, I feel like he always gets these rebounds away from the basket from his hustle. Like, it's not like he's boxing out, but he's like finding the garbage rebounds, like the long rebounds. I always feel like that's what I picture in my head when I see it.
All right. Well, I hear it. We got one more super chat as we wrap up and zip. But thank you for all the great birthday wishes, everybody out there. And let's have another great season on YouTube with all the videos. I'd love to have you guys come back and flock. And if you're not subscribed, you probably are if you're watching this, but subscribe or resubscribe or hit those whatever thing. I would like to see my subscriber numbers go up. You know, the views keep going up, but the subscribers never don't. I don't know if it matters, but it would be nice, just to get to 900 or a million. All right. Pookie, thank you so much. Pookie. Thoughts on Portland's backcourt? They seem to have some good trade pieces.
Wait, one thing. Sorry. Is that Pookie from New Jack City?
There's no picture with his things. We don't know, but maybe.
All right. Go ahead, Coach.
Now, you are aware that New Jack City is a movie. It's not real.
Well, it's real to me.
Okay. Also, can you see Thybulle carving out minutes? I think he can be a valuable contributor. So let's go back. Thybulle absolutely should be getting minutes wherever he is, because he is one of the best defenders, I think, in the league. And I'm hoping that he got some work on the 3-point shot. They're going to be wide open for him for at least half the season until he starts making them. So I would anticipate him being able to be that guy in the corner that does a little bit of spacing. They have to pay attention to him. Now, we love what's going on in the backcourt, right, with Portland. I love Simons and Scoot. I think that would be a great backcourt to develop and let them go. So I cannot wait to see that. And in fact, you know what? You put them together and they start playing well sooner than later. And then you have, right now, they have Robert Williams, who's apparently healthy, and they have Ayton. Like, you have a team that could compete every night.
Yes, they do. And I don't see why Simons would be a trade piece.
Right. They're not going to trade Simons.
Yeah.
Brogdon for sure. And Brogdon, Williams or Ayton, one of those two.
I mean, Brogdon's a no-brainer. Like, I think any GM who was in this situation with Portland would be looking to move Brogdon for some younger pieces that could help him in the future.
I mean, but imagine Brogdon and Williams, if they package that, like, they could get a haul for that. There are teams.
They just signed Williams, right? That's interesting.
Yeah. Well,
so did you see, like, what could have happened with that Dame thing? So Dame, like, almost looked out for Williams.
I didn't, but I don't have time for you.
Okay. Never mind. Next time.
All right. Gotta go. I got started at the gym in a minute. Anyhow, well, thank you so much for all the super chats out there. Let's just go through it real quick and give everyone a shout out here. Connor, multiple times. Thank you so much. Case, Kais, Bron, Dan Hoot, Blorange, Allen, Pookie. Thank you so much for all the super chats and everybody else. We'll see you next time. And Combo, as always, great to have you on the show and joining me. And I will see you in person. So we'll chop it up somehow when we're there together. And don't forget, sports fans, the B-Ball Breakdown, not a channel, we're a conversation.